Welcome back, after a long hiatus, to Transported. In this episode, I'm going to try and explain why there's been this pause and to give you some idea about what I'm going to try and do going forward and why. It's important to note that any feedback is helpful and nobody saying anything has been the main form of feedback, and that both explains the hiatus and why I'm trying to do something about it now. So, enjoy. So here's what I'm struggling with. It would be very easy to try and distill this down to, well, nobody seems to really listen to my podcast because I don't get any feedback, or not enough people seem to listen to it to make it worth doing because I can see that I only got 33 listens and four of them were probably my mother on repeat. But that's not really what's going on. I think it's been a question of a deeper self-doubt. Do I really have anything that's that worthwhile to say? How many of my thoughts are actually original? I found that quite often I have what seems to me to be a great idea, and because I'm lazy and not as widely read as I would like to think I am, it seems to be a brilliant original theory on something. One example, I was talking to a friend in Buenos Aires last summer and giving him some advice, probably unsolicited, on a matter of business, and I said to him, well, I think it's a matter of capacity, capability, and competence. It was something I just thought of on the spur of the moment, and I was trying to describe the difference between these three characteristics and why it was helpful to divide them up. And he thought this was an amazing piece of advice, and I hope it turned out to be useful. But then I thought, oh, maybe I should write something about this or do a podcast episode. So I just Googled those three words, and of course it turns out there are entire PhDs on this subject. So what felt gloriously original absolutely wasn't. And the problem is, I'm never going to be the guy who goes to write the PhD about it. I would rather just do it as an amateur. The trouble these days is that, of course, we live in an era of the appeal to experts. And the last thing I am is an expert on anything much, except maybe how to blag really cheap business class flights. And there's so many people doing podcasts and YouTube channels on them. I could do an entire parody channel of the people who do channels on that subject. But I won't do that because I'm lazy and probably somebody's done it. So I've been pondering what the purpose of doing these podcasts actually is. And it seems to me that there's one driving reason to do it, which is that it's a diary. I'm too lazy to actually write something down. And some of my erstwhile best friends who are in the habit of journaling every day and swear by it have tried to persuade me that's what I should do. But I found that journaling is just a frustrating process. I don't end up putting down enough thoughts that give me any great inspiration or that make me feel that I have more clarity. I'm quite capable of just having those thoughts and then digesting them on my next train or plane or car ride. I don't need to have them scribbled in some format or other to make that work. So this isn't a journal in that sense. This is a diary of other thoughts about the wider world. And actually, I don't really care if they're original or not. They're original to me in the sense that they come from me as the point of origin. And that's what actually matters to me. I enjoy having those thoughts. And I don't really care who listens. I don't really care what people think of them. It's nice if this is interesting. It's great if people want to have an interesting debate with me on the back of it. It's lovely if this helps people in any way. But in the nicest possible way, this is actually about me. Now, here's the second point of that. Maybe this sounds like a bit of an ego trip, but I'm going to try and give you some revelation here that I really think it might be the opposite. It's taken me a long time to try and work out how to do that and do it as humbly as I can. And that's why I'm trying to be as honest as possible in this episode about the difficulty I have giving myself the discipline to record all of this, even when I've had what I think is a valid and worthy thought to share with you, my audience of possibly my mum. I was listening in the car on this trip that I'm on in Australia, more of which hopefully maybe in an episode that's actually about Transported. I was listening to Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, and the core of that book, and spoiler alert if you haven't read it, the dude goes out and murders these two old ladies. And then the rest of the book is basically about how he gets caught, and it gives you some insights on why he does it. And then in the epilogue, it basically turns out that he gets off pretty lightly. They slip him into some pretty soft gulag by Russian standards for a few years. He's got some hot wife waiting for him on the other side who, bizarrely, although she knows he's murdered these two women before he even goes to court, still loves him. The whole explanation of why he murders them is pretty relevant to me, and don't worry, I haven't murdered any old ladies on my travel. The gist of it is, and it's a bit of a naff plot twist, that he turns out to have written this whole paper that gets published about how there's basically a sort of superior class of people who sit outside the normal morality of the universe, and they're able to bend the universe to their will, and that they have this special gift to be able to do so. And he believes that he's one of these special, gifted and talented people, and that therefore the normal legal and moral code doesn't apply to him. And he rationalizes the murder of the first old lady because she's this nasty spinster who acts as a pawnbroker and obviously is very usurious. And then he kills the sister because she's something of an imbecile, and she catches him in the act of having murdered the other one. So he has to get away with it. And of course, he believes he's special. So his survival in the world comes above either of these two women's lives. What happens during the book is that he gradually realizes that he isn't one of these special people. It's not really clear whether he completely disavows his entire theory. I think that he believes there are special people who are able to sit outside these rules, but he realizes that he isn't one of them. And there's a question of how you become anointed as one of these special people. Now, I've spent most of my life basically assuming that I was one of some group of special people, not, again, I repeat for clarity and any future court cases, a murdering special person. I'll give you a second story, which some of you know. Many years ago, when I first moved to Israel, a whole series of very strange coincidences started to happen to me. And these coincidences became ever more frequent and more bizarre. People would recognize me in the street, and I didn't know why. I seemed to be having great success setting up a very interesting and ambitious business that I hope would have made some difference to Israel as a functioning and viable state. And I was able to coalesce around me a team of people at very short notice. The fluky way in which we met our main funders, it all sort of seemed to be clicking together rather nicely. At some point, I went to a conference in Denver, which was the Jewish Federation's General Assembly. So it's a kind of jamboree of all different Jewish organizations. And they have this big hall, sort of an exhibition hall, with different stands of each Jewish organization and charity. You know, they want to show their wares and pitch and meet donors and whatever else. And I'm walking through this hall, and there is this random Frum guy just lounging behind his desk, dozing. And unlike everybody else, he hasn't invested in lovely posters and leaflets and things to give out. There's none of these fancy laminated displays, nothing at all. It's just him and a bare booth and a handful of photocopied leaflets. And as I come closer to this dozing man, he sits up with a start. He looks at me. He practically leaps over the desk. And he stops me and he says, "You, I came here for you." And I think, okay, this is a bit bizarre. I wonder how many people he pulls this trick on. What does he want? Is he after money? Certainly don't have any of that. What's going on? And he says, "You're doing something that's really important for the Jewish state and the Jewish people. And I know who you are, and you need to keep going. And a lot of weird stuff has happened to you. And I want to explain these coincidences. Read this leaflet. It will tell you everything you need to know. My work here is done." And he swept up the rest of his leaflets and turned around and marched out of the conference. So I'm standing there a little bewildered, and I open this leaflet, and it says something along the lines of, "Have you heard of the Lamed Vav?" So the Lamed Vav, in short, the 36, is a Kabbalistic tradition that in every generation, depending on which rabbis interpret it in the Kabbalah. I mean, I haven't read the original source text. This is just my scratchy memory from the leaflet. Essentially, in every generation, there are 36 Jews, or possibly 36 Jews and non-Jews, or 36 of each, it's not quite clear, who are imbued with some special power or with a characteristic that, unknown to them perhaps, is a piece of the jigsaw puzzle that enhances the world and the Jews' place within it for that generation. It keeps the Jewish people safe. And it turns out that this guy believed that I was one of the Lamed Vav, and that it all kind of came together. That's why when I meet people who have come from a strong Kabbalistic tradition, they think they somehow know who I am or why. And this has happened, and I have plenty of witnesses for this. When in Israel, I've run into an entire group of West African Christian pilgrims, and they all want to shake my hand and thank me, and I don't know why they're thanking me. So this certainly did not help my slightly messianic complex and huge ego. Of course, if I really was one of the Lamed Vav, then I'm pretty sure that at least one of my attempts to make my business work, and we went through, I would say, three pretty decent-sized iterations of the business, would have worked, instead of which I ended up shutting pretty much all of it down, largely moving out of Israel and doing something completely different with my life. All of which is to say that I've learned in recent years to try and have as much humility as I can, which is definitely not as much humility as most people manage. It's very hard to even say this, because the fact that I'm doing this on a podcast and wondering if people are listening is itself not exactly the most humble act, but I'm just trying to be honest. And like I said, I'm doing this more as a diary for myself. So hear these words in a few years' time, Michael. Try and be as humble as you possibly can. Part of that process in terms of this podcast has been speaking to some of my closest friends and confidants and getting feedback. And I've had a couple of people who said, well, you don't really have as much to offer as you think you do. That's why people don't listen. If they did, it would work. We live in an era where things get picked up if they're supposed to. So it's you. And then I have others who say, wow, we like that you're so eclectic. That's an interesting thing. But I think that's interesting because people know me and because I'm traveling. And so conversations I used to have over the dinner table or a coffee in Tel Aviv, I now am not having. And so this is a place where I can collect and disseminate my thoughts. Is there really a wider audience beyond my friends to hear me talk about stuff? I'm not that sure. What's interesting is that most podcasts are unbelievably focused. The other thing is that almost all podcasts are in the form of either interviews or dialogues. So this is neither. This tends to be a monologue. And by the way, that's also not for lack of trying. So one of the problems that I have is that what I would want to do in an interview, especially on a non-travel related, i.e. something more contentious subject, I would want to have a proper debate, a proper dialogue. I would want to hear what people really thought. I would want my friends to tell the truth about their opinions. And I know from friends who I know what they really think off record, and I know what they will say if anyone else is listening. And I've realized that most people are terrified of being cancelled. And I'm not scared of being cancelled. I'm actually fairly uncancellable. I don't need to be employed by anybody else. I've managed to set myself up in such a way that hopefully I can carry on living this really interesting life of just going where I please, doing what I please, meeting who I please, definitely not eating what I please. And that's one thing I must get more disciplined about. All of which is to say, it's surprisingly hard to find people with whom you can have a really straight dialogue. So I'm stuck on just it being me. And obviously that's also a factor of the travel that I'm doing. I'm just not in the same place as people. And I've tried once or twice to do things over the internet, and it is just immensely hard to get any serious quality out of it unless you have a lot of patience or money to throw at editing. In the course of trying to work out what to do about this podcast, I had a very intriguing discussion with a friend of mine who was actually quite mortified because I pointed out to her that we were both in the top 1% of people in terms of intellect. And she's somebody who is extraordinarily gifted. She's a brilliant woman. And she just couldn't hear it. She didn't want to hear it, even though it's just an objective fact that if you present IQ on a spectrum, then anyone who's over a certain amount is in the top 1%. It's surprisingly easy to be in that 1%. Average Western IQ is, I think, 105 or so. average Ashkenazi Western IQ is 115 or so. She and I are both, well, she's half and half. I'm definitely very Ashkenazi. So we're already starting far down the distribution curve, and both of us definitely have IQs a lot higher than 115. This was a kind of shock to her. It was almost an insult. And in our discussion, I was trying to ask her, you know, I'm trying to work out what on earth I do about this podcast. I'm trying to think through whether I have anything to tell the world. And her attitude was, well, you probably don't, because people aren't that special. We're not that special. And I was thinking, no, we really are. And you really are. And it's fascinating because I think a lot of my friends are underperformers in many ways. The ones who are the most brilliant. In many ways, I think most of my closest friends are underperformers, and I don't think that they would mind me characterizing them as such. I think the big question is, and we're all at this turning point in our lives, you can call it a midlife crisis if you want, where we're realizing we've probably left it too late to actually be special. If you're not special at 40, you're not going to be special. But that doesn't mean that we can't still do something, and at this point we have to have some purpose, some meaning, some drive in our lives. For others, that probably is career choices and definitely life partner choices. And for me, it's been the opposite. I've chosen not to have a life partner and not to have a career. The irony, I think, is that the right life partner simultaneously builds and lifts you up so that you feel special so much of the time, and is also the exact point who grounds you the most in the realities and the humdrum of life. My 20 minutes is nearly up, so I'll try and draw this to a close. The point of it is that statistically, I might be in that top 1%, but for reasons to do with capability, capacity, and competence, I haven't got the outward trappings of somebody who's in that 1%. I often have the feelings of specialness that come with knowing that you're in this automatic elite by dint of pretty natural qualities. They're not things that I've ever worked on nearly as hard as I could or should have. I think that the purpose for me of the next 40 or 50 years, if I keep myself in some kind of shape, is that the quest itself is special. It's not about me being special. I have fallen on my feet in life to a point where at 43, I am doing exactly what most people have always wanted to do with their lives and usually have to wait until their 60s or 70s or, God forbid, never get to do, which is to just see the world on my own terms. And it's an incredible thing. So I think that my conclusion is that the thing that I can do the best and the way in which I can have the most humility is to show my enjoyment and appreciation of the special life that I get to lead. And I hope that that is what these podcasts are going to really be about. It's a bit of a cliche to talk about things being about the journey but not the destination. But in my case, I think that's exactly it. I've long since missed the destination of proving to the world that I'm special. It turns out that my journey is special, and I want to honor that journey and honor my friends and family who have humored me as I've struggled to work out what the hell I'm doing with my life. And I think most of you are coming with me on this journey in every possible sense of that word, and you're welcome. And I look forward to hearing what you have to say about this. And again, feel free to say nothing. Feel free to think, oh, that is the most bizarre 20-minute long humble brag we've ever heard. I get that. It's quite hard for me to try and work out how to articulate this in the correct way, but I hope you appreciate the intent. And this has been Transported. Next time, something softer, I hope. I still haven't worked out a great way to end these episodes, so bye.